If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Being in the right place at the right time, I think it's a very similar type of skill set that you need to deploy. Really thinking about, well, you know, what does the market look like? What are the trends in that particular market? What will demand look like?
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Vanessa Liu is the VP of SAP.io, a global organization responsible for building an ecosystem of startups around SAP. In her role, she is overseeing SAP.io's North American foundries in New York and San Francisco, including programs devoted to women and diverse-led B2B enterprise tech companies. Vanessa was most recently the chief operating officer at Trigger Media Group, a $22 million digital media incubator. And in her role there, she co-founded, incubated, and oversaw business operations and strategic initiatives of Trigger's portfolio companies. She's a Fulbright scholar at University of Utrecht in the Netherlands, where she conducted independent research on the International War Crimes Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia and the International Court of Justice. And she also served as first vice president of the Harvard Alumni Association. Vanessa, that's an impressive background. Welcome to the show. I don't even know where to start necessarily with today. I told you this offline, but I feel a little bit out of my league interviewing you. You know, I guess the first questions that I would ask you is, can you define for our audience what SAP is?
Yes, I'm blushing, Sam. Thank you so much for having me. So SAP is one of the largest enterprise technology companies out there. So we provide the software so that other companies can run their businesses. So if you think about the Fortune 2000, I would say about 90% of them run SAP in some shape or form, either for when it comes to procurement, when it comes to their enterprise resource planning, when it comes to their human resources side, or when it comes to actually running the physical website. So if you look at Apple, for instance, and the iPhones, we provide the software so that Apple can do their business. If you look at Nike, we provide the software so that they can run their e-commerce activities.
Wow, that's amazing. That, I mean, what a cool business to get into. How did SAP form? And then how did you guys become so prestigious?
Yeah, so SAP formed about 48 years ago by five guys who came out of IBM, and they saw firsthand the need for enterprise software that could really help companies just manage their resources and to know, for instance, when supply was necessary, what the demand was like, how that could tie into financial systems. And so that was what the core of the business started off with. And then over the years, the business has really expanded to be all-encompassing, anything that a company or enterprise company would need to run their businesses. So they made acquisitions. So for instance, to get into the HR tech landscape so that when it comes to recruiting and onboarding your employees and paying them, there's software to do that. When it comes to running the e-commerce side, there's also software to do that. We also, a few years ago, bought Qualtrics, which a lot of companies use in terms of surveys. And so that adds on the capability so that you can fold in experience management to anything it is that you do. So over the years, it's really built up. It's a German-based company, but it's global. And so our market cap is about $120 billion today and active in all of the, all around the world.
Right. I mean, that's fascinating. How, I guess, when you guys go into a business or into a new industry, how often does that happen? Let's start with that question.
Well, we're already in 27 industries and we have over 440,000 customers. And so I don't know if there are any new industries to go into, but there are always certainly new customers to work with. And also different customers consume SAP in different ways. It's not like some are wall-to-wall SAP, other ones are just like a part of it. And so it's about really understanding the business problems that enterprises have and thinking about how partnering with SAP can help them with that. And actually, that's where our startups come in. So I oversee, as you were saying, our North American foundries. And so this is part of our global network of zero equity accelerators that we run around the world where we find startups to bring in into the SAP ecosystem. And so we plug them into our products so that our customers can access them. So these are startups that could be anywhere between seed and all the way to Series C startups. And partnering with SAP, because we're such a large organization, it's hard to know where to start. So our programs are really devoted to shepherding the startups so that they know where to integrate. They do it in a very short period of time. Basically, in 4 months, they're integrated to SAP and they get onto our third-party app store so that our customers can access their solutions.
That's fascinating. What is a typical size? Like, where does this, when you, because, you know, startup means something different to you than it means to me.
Yeah.
So what does startup mean to you?
So the earliest stage startups that we work with, like around the seed stage, are usually at least a handful of people, if not like up to 10 to 15 people. They've raised some money. They have a product in the marketplace. They have something that is viable and there's some type of product market fit and there's an overlap in terms of our customers. But, you know, obviously they're earlier stage startups. Before that, we just tend not to work with such early stage companies. And so like these companies, the fact that there's already a product in the marketplace means that they've probably been active already for at least a couple of years.
Right, right. Yeah, that's interesting because there has to be a certain, you have to have achieved a certain velocity or size to where it makes sense for you guys to come in and say, okay, now we can build the frame around this and actually have, you know, take you guys to the next level.
Right, right. And also because you're so pressed and strapped for resources as an early stage startup and a large company like SAP, of course, like we can open up a lot of doors, but you have to be at a maturity level where you can absorb those opportunities and take advantage of them.
Right. Yeah. Because you guys could have all the resources and all the solutions in the world, but if it's too big for the size of the company, it might just, I mean, it would be, you'd be just drowning the people that are there with resources.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating. How does this crossover, like when you see these companies, you know, starting out, let's say at the 10 to 15, like what are some of the keys that you see, or 10 to 15 employees, like what are some of the keys that you see that these successful companies keep implementing over and over that help them to achieve the next step or the next stage or evolution of their business rather?
Yeah. So there are a few things that we look for. The first thing is, are these companies in a market which is just like has a lot of tailwinds? It's growing really fast. And are they providing a really unique solution to it? So that's the first thing that we do. The second thing is really looking at the founding team, because we roll up our sleeves. And I was mentioning before, we're zero equity, which means that we're very founder friendly. We don't get onto the cap tables of these companies. We don't provide investment, but we provide a lot of value add in terms of opening doors to customers. And because our reputation is on the line, we want to make sure we work with founders who are coachable. So that's something that we really spend a lot of time doing due diligence on. And the third thing is also just how complementary is it to our SAP solutions, because we provide a different lens when it comes to certain entry points, but also at the same time, we have our product roadmap as well. So we look at companies that are going to be providing something that we know that we won't be providing. And so it's a win-win for the startups and for the customers and also for SAP.
When you say zero equity, does that mean that you guys don't take an equity stake in the company itself?
Right, right. And so we work with about 100 companies a year, 100 startups a year.
Wow.
Globally.
So let me ask you this. Have there been companies you've brought on board that for whatever reason just didn't take off?
So out of the almost 80 companies I've worked with at SAP over the last 3 years, I would say only two of them have folded. And I think that that actually is like a really good hit rate, just considering that one out of 10 startups typically make it to like at least $1 million or beyond in revenues, and they continue onwards. And a lot of this has to do with obviously the stage of the companies that we pick. But also, if I look at the companies that didn't make it, it typically is because of a couple of things. Actually, it's because they run out of funding. It's not because their product was not done well. It's because the funding wasn't there. And so what I should also mention is that at least 40% of the companies that we work with are companies that are led by women and underrepresented founders. It's actually something that we're really proud of, because if you look at the VC landscape, only about 13% of dollars go to companies that have mixed founding teams. If you look at the number of, for instance, people of color who are trying to go out there and raise money, it's in single digits. And so we're trying to change the face of at least enterprise technology by picking whom we work with. But we know that it's really a question of access to capital, which is, you know, something that really separates a lot of companies. And so we do see that sometimes it is harder for these companies to raise money because they don't have the access.
Right. And is that something you guys assist with, is the capital raise, or no?
So we have a great network of venture partners that we work with, and just VC firms around the country that we are always tapping into and introducing our companies to.
Gotcha. Wow. That's fascinating. What a fun business to be in. What are some other key, I guess, qualitative things that you see some of your firms implementing that you would say are things that we should be emulating here in our real estate businesses?
When I look at the real estate business, right, and so much of this is also about picking the right investments and thinking about how do you do the due diligence, being in the right place at the right time, I think it's a very similar type of skill set that you need to deploy, really thinking about, well, you know, what does the market look like? What are the trends in that particular market? What will demand look like? Especially when you're thinking about investment properties, right? You have to have that in mind. Who could be your end customer? And how is that going to evolve? And what does the competitive landscape look like? Very, very similar types of questions that you ask. And if anything, I think like in real estate, this is my outside perspective looking in, as I shared with you, you know, I happen to own my home and also a second home, but that's about it. When it comes to passive income, this is actually something I would love to learn more about and to see what opportunities there are, because I think like, you know, when you have a physical asset, that there's like a lot of intrinsic value to that too, compared to software companies where at the end, yes, you might have IP, but I bet you the write-off is going to be much greater when it comes to tech companies than it is when it comes to actual physical real estate.
Right. Now that's interesting. That's interesting. How fascinating. Is there anything else, I guess, as you look through the lens again of what you see business people or businesses doing right now that you guys are involved in that are successful process-wise or maybe team-building-wise? I know one of the things that you had mentioned early on was that in the founding team, you guys look for coachability.
Yeah.
The founding team. Are there some other things like that that you would say are more qualitative and not quantitative things that you guys look for?
Yeah, it's coachability. It's also, do they have that unique experience and insight that others don't have? And that's actually something I would say is also just as important in real estate, right? And it's not just like about the location, but is there something special about that particular piece of property, you know, that unique proposition that just, you know, pushes people over the edge? Like I should mention that the second home that we have is, I know our goal is to turn that into a rental property, but more like short-term rental property. And of course, like you think a lot about what does the competitive landscape look like and how do you make that unique? So that unique factor, that wow factor is also something that we look at when it comes to founders. And I would also say, you know, here are some other things too. I happen to have been an advisor to Knotel, which was a WeWork competitor that was based out of New York over the last few years. It unfortunately went into Chapter 11 earlier this year and got acquired by Newmark. But, you know, what was really interesting about Knotel was how we were approaching the real estate, the commercial real estate market, first in New York City, and then we were all around the world. So it was about creating these flexible spaces so that a lot of high growth companies would not have to sign long-term leases. So you can go in there, you could customize your space. You could have even a full floor. So it was different from a WeWork, which was like much more about smaller offices, at least like when it started. And you can really call it your own, but if, for instance, you grew out of it in 12 months, 18 months, you wouldn't be beholden to a 5-year or 10-year lease. You can actually just pony that up and get into another location. You know, the founders of that business did not come from real estate, but it was because they were looking at it from a user perspective. And they actually started the business because they happened to have had a lot of space left over in their first office. That actually was what grew out of it. It's that type of insight. It's that type of orthogonal thinking that I would say you want to be looking for when it comes to an investment.
Right. No, that's fascinating. That's absolutely fascinating. I think that goes back to the entrepreneurial spirit of seeing a need and filling it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's it. And I think when you see that need and fill it, you then can develop that story as to why this is something that we should be investing in.
Right. Like another business I've been looking at from the outside, I happen to know the founders, is a company called Mint House. And what Mint House is doing is they first started off in smaller cities. So Nashville, I believe, was their first city where they went in and decided to just create short-term rentals, mainly for the corporate traveler. So as an alternative to hotels, like where you go into a Marriott, like a suite, and it's much more well-designed. It is like very comfortable. And again, people not from real estate that decided to go in, but like people who were traveling quite a lot for business, and they were realizing that this was a need. And lo and behold, you know, through the course of the pandemic, they've still been able to grow, especially because a lot of people don't want to stay in hotels, right? Where there's probably too many people staying in one building. It's probably better to be in a smaller building where you have your own place, you have access to a kitchen, you can like take out food. And they were just touting on LinkedIn, the founder was, that they are now the number one hotel, like considered number one hotel property in New York City. So they opened up a property in New York City. And, you know, again, goes to show like how if you have a very different way of thinking, like, look, there are so many hotels out there in the market. There are also so many short-term rental properties to stay in. But how were they able to be number one? It's because they were just so committed to a few things. One was customer service. Another thing was design. Another thing was comfort. And being able to just always delivering that again and again and again has enabled them to get to where they are today.
Right. And I think that's a key. That's a huge key for anybody in any industry.
Exactly.
Is finding your product, refining it to a point of perfection, and then delivering that repeatedly.
Yeah. It's like, what do you stand for, right? You want people to say, hey, you know, when you say X, what do you stand for? I think like companies like Virgin, you know, like Richard Branson has done such an amazing job when it comes to that. You know that it stands for, you know, the consumer first. It is going to be cool. It is always going to be good value. You know, thinking through what do you stand for, having a very clear idea of that rather than just being a me too type of company.
Yeah, that's great insight. I certainly appreciate that. Vanessa, let's jump here into the final four. I regret to say it, we're out of time. I've got 1,000 more questions for you because what you do is super cool and outside of my everyday. So unfortunately, we got to jump here into the final four. But the first question is this: what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Really get to know your end customer backwards and forwards and just have that, you know, that different type of perspective that no one else can have. Really put yourselves into the shoes of that customer, because if you have a customer lens, you're going to have the insights to build a great business.
That's great. Number two is this: when it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you are doing to stay on top of your game?
So one thing that I do, I'm constantly making sure that I call upon my personal board of advisors. So there's a group of people that I always call upon when it comes to career advice, career changes. These are people that I've known anywhere between 3 years to even up to 25 years. And so that is something that I think is incredibly important because they keep me honest. They are always pounding the table for me. And I think everybody out there needs to have a team around them.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. Question number three is this: when it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you are making the world a better place?
So I've been thinking so much about a couple of big segments. And so I've been thinking a lot about silver tech and aging in place. I've been thinking a lot about sustainability and climate change. You know, when it comes to sustainability, I have the chance to do a lot of that work in my day-to-day job at SAP. And obviously also working with underrepresented founders, I do think that the face of technology has to be one that is representative of everyone out there. And so that's something that I'm very proud of doing.
That's awesome. Good for you. Vanessa, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter, Vanessa W. Liu. So Vanessa W-L-I-U, or on LinkedIn.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Vanessa, for your time. This was awesome. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.